All right. I'm Eureka John, back here at the Unrestricted Intelligence Summit. The building's kind of quiet now. All the speakers and all the audience has gone, but one person remains here with me. One of the people that helped to put this event on, and the keynote and the final speaker as well. And one of the, I guess, the main figure of Morpheus as well. And Morpheus is, I guess, the project that put this event on, correct?
It's one of the co-hosts, one of the community members. And, you know, I'm a humble contributor to the open source. And that's
as somebody in an open source community would and probably should say, too, right? It's Daniel Johnston. Daniel, not Daniel Johnston. That's the Austin iconic artist. But we are in Austin. David Johnston. Yep. Yeah, we were just talking about Daniel Johnston, and if you haven't heard his music, it's pretty interesting stuff. So it's definitely iconic Austin. So yeah, but that's a whole other subject all in itself. We'll sit here with David Johnston, and tell me a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into Morpheus and a problem that Morpheus solves. So sure. First you.
So, you know, I've been in the crypto space since 2012. You know, I was lucky to be an economics nerd. And so the idea of, you know, honest money was really attractive to me, right? Something that was controlled by mathematics and not politicians.
Okay.
Sounded pretty great. And so, you know, basically started, you know, putting my capital and my time into Bitcoin. Spoke at some of the first conferences in 2013. And, you know, just really realized there was a whole vision, not just for Bitcoin, but for building this whole tech stack of smart contracts with Ethereum. You know, then we got Filecoin, decentralized cloud, you know, and now with all these decentralized AI projects, it's really exciting to sort of come from these base layers all the way to something people can use in their hand today. It's really been amazing to watch.
Yeah, so protocol based, right?
Yep.
And by protocol, I mean a set of rules, not like Google says, don't be evil, but can't be evil, right?
Yep, that is the motto, right? So I sort of want to spend the rest of my life transitioning the world from violence-based consensus mechanisms, like traditional governments or nation states, to math-based consensus mechanisms. So I think that will give people much better outcomes.
Okay, so violence-based consensus mechanisms, meaning basically, if you don't do it, we will shoot you.
Right, or put you in prison or a cage or whatever. You know, I mean, it's effectively the
same. Any coercive use of force.
I don't think coercion or violence gives you good outcomes, right? And so you look at the best places in the world, they tend to have a lot of space for personal property, personal choice, what you call freedom or liberty, right? Not only in your speech, but in the things you can own, the work you can do, the value you can create for others. Those tend to be prosperous societies people want to go towards, right? And so what I see, you know, crypto doing is extending that in a whole new way, where now we have property rights secured in cryptography.
Okay.
We have property rights secured in math, not in the arbitrary decision of a regulator or the arbitrary decision of a judge.
Mm-hmm.
It's something where you hold those keys, you own those coins, right?
Okay.
And I think that's much more interesting. And you look at the global adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the highest adoption?
Yeah.
It's in Nigeria. It's in Turkey. It's in, you know, places like Argentina. It's in places like Vietnam, right? So a lot of those have crossed almost 50% crypto ownership in those jurisdictions. And it's because they don't have good property rights. And so all of a sudden they have an option that's honest and isn't arbitrary and can't be taken away from them. They can take that value anywhere they go. It works on their phone and they can't be excluded. Like imagine living in Nigeria. And told your entire life you cannot access the global financial system. I'm sorry, you're from the wrong country. And so we're just going to block all 200 million people from accessing basic financial services. Like that's not right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So now comes along a system that doesn't care where you're from or your skin color, anything else. If the math works, it's your coins.
Amazing. Yeah, I've heard, I don't know where I heard it from, but in places like Nigeria and in Africa and in South America that don't have the infrastructure, they adopt it a lot faster because we have telephone poles everywhere. We have all this stuff that's almost, it's so advanced that it's encumbering us to fast adoption.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the concept of sort of the leapfrog development.
Absolutely.
If you missed landlines, that's okay. Now there's cell towers.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. If you missed banks, that's okay. Now there's crypto.
Yeah. And they have their cell phones.
Of course.
And they have the desire and the motivation to suddenly learn crypto because they have no other choice.
Right. Well, I mean, gives them a freedom and access that they wouldn't have without it.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Okay. So let's get on to Morpheus a little bit. Mm-hmm. Morpheus is not a company. It's an open source protocol, correct?
Yep.
Kind of like TCP/IP, what the web was built on, that was open and free to everybody originally. And a lot of people had originally envisioned the web to be before it got siloed into these walled gardens of Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. Morpheus is an open protocol to keep AI decentralized. Am I correct in that?
You know, that's a good way to describe it. It's like, how do you create a personal AI that you can own, that's connected to your Web3 wallet, that does what you tell it to do, and it's aligned to you as an individual?
Yeah.
Right? Not aligned to Google, not aligned to some company or government. It's your personal AI.
Okay.
Right? It's an extension of you. It's your data, right? It's your preferences. It's what you want to do. You know, for the same reason everybody wanted a personal laptop.
Yep.
Same reason everybody wants a personal phone. Like, people forget, it didn't start like that.
Mm-hmm.
You used to have the phone was just called the operator, right? And they would connect you.
Yeah.
Turned out people wanted the freedom to connect to anybody they wanted.
Uh-huh.
Right? And computers started as terminals going into a mainframe. Turns out people wanted to store their own photos and their own data and keep that personal, for the same reason people are going to want a personal AI.
Yeah.
Right? And these open source models are getting really good.
Uh-huh.
They're already maybe 90-95% as accurate as like a ChatGPT-4.
Okay.
And I expect later this year the open source models will surpass the proprietary models. There's more compute, there are more great engineers in the open source community than in any one company by itself. That's why Linux won for servers, it's why Android won for phones. Just having a frictionless system where there's nobody extracting rent.
Okay.
I mean, think about the guy in Nigeria.
Yeah.
He's probably using a $30 Android phone.
Yep. Yeah.
If he had to pay for an operating system, it would cost more than the value of the phone. It doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So 80 or 90% of all phones now are running on Android.
Wow.
For that reason, there's nobody extracting rent. You can use the operating system for free.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. So I guess where the internet went wrong and steered a wrong direction, Morpheus is trying to keep AI from steering that wrong direction, would you say?
Well, it's been a really interesting history, right? OpenAI, for example, started as a nonprofit.
Okay.
That was open source.
Yeah.
That's how they built their community, hence the Open and OpenAI.
Yeah.
But when they got to a point and wanted to scale, they went the corporate route.
Mm-hmm.
They turned into a for-profit. They sold out to Microsoft. They took $30 billion for them, and they closed-sourced all the models.
Okay.
And sort of betrayed so many of the engineers and community members that had made open-source AI what it was, right?
Yeah.
It made OpenAI, you know, so successful. And so people are looking for an alternative that, you know, is going to be owned by the community, built by the community, and can never turn into a company because it's a public blockchain project that's totally open source.
Okay, so I guess you can think about it almost like an interstate, a freeway, you know, that you're creating that anybody could be able to use and build alongside and build access to that freeway.
Sure.
Whether or not they're for profit or not,
sure.
You know, and when he's mentioned AI, the AI models are just as good as some of the corporate driven ones.
Yeah,
these are just individuals creating their own AI model projects that can plug into it.
So some of the big open source models, you might have heard of Llama, released by Meta. There's now Llama 2. Looks like they'll be releasing the next version in July, Llama 3. But there's also companies in Europe like Mistral that have released great open source models. There's the guys at Noose Hermes who fine tune those models. And so when I say an open source model, it means the weights are open for everybody to download. Mm. And once you've done the training on a model, the weights are just a database.
Okay.
You don't really need any compute. It just sits in your RAM.
Huh.
You know, in fact, on my computer right now, I've got a copy of Morpheus. And it's only 16, gigabytes in size. It's a 7 billion parameter model. And just runs on my laptop.
Okay.
And it doesn't need much in the way of the compute. Because all I'm doing once the model is trained is saying, here's my question. Here's my prompt. And it's giving me an answer based on the statistical likelihood of the next AI token, like the next word in the sentence. And so it's really a word calculator, you know, is a good way to think of a large language model. But, you know, the comparison I would use for Morpheus is more like Ethereum. Ethereum realized there needed to be a generalized platform for people to release smart contracts and decentralized applications. And they didn't build any of those. They let somebody else build Uniswap and Compound and all these smart contracts, but they give people the rails. Here's the wallet. Here's consensus mechanism. Here's the place to store the data. Here's all the infrastructure. And it's the same thing with Morpheus. Morpheus is not building any smart agents. It's more like a marketplace where anybody can release their smart agent. Hey, I built a great one that does these images of cars or whatever. They've created some, you know, some guy was talking about specialized medical use cases, which are incredible. Right? And it's like, I want a smart agent for that. Right? And a thousand other things. And then the cool thing about that is you can sort of let the market decide. You know, when people release an app on the App Store, Apple doesn't promise them revenue. It's whatever number of people downloaded and pay for their app. That's what they get rewarded. And the important thing there is you let the individual decide. Right, as opposed to trying to take a vote. Like, what should be the applications on this system? That's what everybody did before Ethereum. They tried to bake the smart contracts and the use cases into the protocol itself. And they tried to predict, is it like a central planner? Well, there's gonna be the need for an exchange. But they limited the intelligence of the people that could build to only a small team instead of like literally anybody. And Ethereum's breakthrough and brilliance was, no, just leave it open, let anybody build on it, and we're just going to provide the rails. And it is a generalizable protocol. So that's what Morpheus is doing, but for smart agents. What's a smart agent? It's an AI that can use a smart contract. So because it's connected to your wallet, it can do stuff for you, like stake your ETH or send you Ethereum or whatever you ask it to do. It has that capability.
So and the Apple, it costs a lot for a developer to be able to build and put an app on there. I don't know if Twitter allows people to do that anymore, but the developers have to pay a large amount in order to build on that too. So what an open protocol does is makes it absolutely free for anybody to build their own business on a free market economy that's digital.
That's exactly the idea.
And so the tokens on Ethereum prevent DDoS attacks, and they basically make it costly for anybody to attack the system. However, running a node on Ethereum has a high technological knowledge curve. Tell me a little bit about like the tokens and running a node on Morpheus and what that looks like.
So it's very similar in the sense that anybody can run an Ethereum node. Anybody can run a Morpheus node. I do on my laptop. But a lot of people don't want to run their own hardware. There are only about 20,000 people in the world that run a full Bitcoin node. And I think there are 20, 30,000 that run a full Ethereum node. These are the hobbyists, people that are passionate about it. Most people want to use what's called the light client. Is I can just show up with my keys, prove my identity, prove my ownership, and I'm going to let somebody else broadcast the transaction or handle the back end stuff. Right? Because it's not like they can do anything other than what I'm expecting, because I'm still approving the transaction. I'm inspecting what it's going to do on my behalf. And so I think about Morpheus in the same context, right? You don't necessarily want an autonomous AI. How do I know an autonomous AI will do the things I want? I want to be able to express a preference. Hey, I'm trying to figure out how to stake my ETH. I want the AI to be aware of smart contracts and say, oh, Lido's over here. I've set up the transaction for you. How many would you like to stake? I want to do one. Okay, great. Push this button on MetaMask and approve the transaction. So the user's involved at the beginning,
yeah,
setting up the action. The interface is really just making it easy,
mm-hmm,
right? It's taking all that technical complexity away and just saying, okay, great. Yeah. I've already done all the connections. You just have to approve the result.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? And that's how the internet got to 1 billion users. Do you remember the web before Google?
Oh yeah.
It was janky.
Yeah.
Right?
It was gnarly.
It was like, you know, terminals and directories and IP addresses.
Yes.
It's like crypto today.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, 98, this magic box appears. You tell the machine where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
It curates the whole internet,
yeah,
gives you a few options. You click on the one you want.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made it easy for the average person to just express intent, approve the action.
Yeah.
I think that's the same user flow we want to see with smart agents for decentralized AI.
But without private ownership, right? Just a
no company. Yeah, no company involved.
Yeah, we had the large companies come in and help make Web 1 easier for us to use, but then
they just ended up owning all your data.
Yes,
they just,
exactly.
You know, mined it before you had any idea it had value.
Yeah, exactly. And then now suddenly we have all this data, but we don't get to own it. You know?
Well, and that's the whole idea, is this gives you a smart agent.
Yeah.
That's acting on your behalf.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even have to connect it to the internet.
Uh-huh.
It could just work on your local computer.
Yeah.
I mean, an internet connection when you're going to broadcast a transaction or something.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, it's not calling to anybody else.
Yeah.
It's literally all on your machine,
yeah,
just like your Word document, just like mm-hmm anything else you would build on your personal laptop or your personal phone.
So these smart agents, who are they written by? You know, just developers, just hobbyists, or just people that just want to build? Or
you know, a lot of people have already built interesting AI agents, and there isn't really a place for me to discover them, and there really isn't a recommendation engine before Morpheus to say, hey, this is what you're looking for.
Okay.
Because part of what Morpheus does is just give these developers a registry.
Okay.
They can register on chain. This is the new agent. Here's my hash of the program to prove mm-hmm it's running what you'd expect it to run.
Yeah.
You know, here's my identity. You know, I have a good reputation.
Yeah.
You know, you can see that, you know, his other smart agents haven't scammed anybody. It's all open source.
Uh-huh.
So everybody can see the code for themselves. It's not going to do anything malicious, right? These are all the sort of things you want a developer to be able to do without wading through the permission process of Apple.
Yeah. Sure.
Because that's what Apple's doing. They're like trying to figure out, is this, you know, well, they're taking their 30%. And for that 30%, they're basically doing the same things. Discovery, they're filtering out the you know, malicious actors, right, and trying to give people a fairly protected interface. Yeah.
Okay, so what Morpheus is doing too with the token, that's an incentivization mechanism for these AI builders, right? As contributors, as coders, to say, hey, I created this, it registers, here's my wallet address.
Yep.
Bam, they get the Morpheus token in exchange, and that's what incentivizes them. So, yeah, we all like to think that we're trying to do something for the common good, but we got bills to pay.
You know? Sure. Well, I mean, that's how I describe crypto to a lot of people, is it's been a multi-trillion-dollar way to monetize open source, to reward people for releasing open source, right? And that's just going to continue to grow, and that's exactly it. So if I hold the Morpheus token, just like it does for Ethereum, I can use inference on the network, and you know I'm not an attacker.
Yes.
Because I've got my economic value in the system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm provably hodling some Morpheus tokens. You know, hodl for inference, if you will.
Yeah.
And I stake it when I'm having an interaction, you know, and so the compute provider knows they're going to get paid.
Amazing.
Right? And that's the key. And I haven't seen this type of structure for a while where, you know, the paper proposed not just rewarding compute and not just rewarding capital, which is typically what you get.
Yeah.
It's like proof of stake is capital people.
Yeah, yeah.
Proof of work, it's all compute people.
Uh-huh.
But most people forget the developers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a foundation, it's a couple of guys, there's some committee, you apply for a grant. That's really limited. You know, people forget Ethereum airdropped ETH to hundreds of developers. If you worked on Ethereum before the Genesis block, if someone just commented or reviewed on something, you got ETH.
Mm.
And so they did a really great job of sort of being very egalitarian, where they wanted a broad network effect. And people are like, oh, why are all the developers on ETH? Because that's the protocol that rewarded them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Like, this isn't rocket science, right?
Yeah.
And so in Morpheus, 24% of the rewards go to the coders.
Yeah.
24% go to capital, 24% go to the code, and 24% go to front-end builders and smart agent developers.
Nice. Okay.
And so it's like, what are all the parts of the community that you need to work together?
Yeah.
Because what you don't want is the developers to get hired by some for-profit, and then you're back in the Google problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, if miners are the only ones getting paid by the protocol,
everybody
else has to work for a company. So have the protocol pay all of those groups, and you can move those incentives all aligned on chain.
So do you have to register as one particular sector of that? You know, as
you can do any of them
or
you want.
Or multiple, like if you're a front end and coder, or you know.
Anything you want. It's permissionless.
Yeah, that's true.
They couldn't stop you if they wanted.
That's right,
I mean, it's just an address. It's like, there's no KYC. Yeah. Like, nobody's checking your driver's license. Like, did you do the work? Yes.
Yes.
Here's your address. Bingo.
Yeah.
There's the rewards.
Okay. Like, now, speaking of KYC and that type of thing, do you think you'll have any run-ins with regulators on this type of protocol? Or are they, it's a protocol. They can't really
point
the finger at anybody. Like you said, they can't point the gun at somebody. If
it's hard to point the gun at math.
Yeah, yeah.
They haven't quite figured out the angle to point the gun at math. Most regulations come into effect when there's a custodian or when there's an intermediary.
Yeah.
Somebody's holding funds on your behalf.
Sure.
There's no Morpheus company.
Yeah.
There's no pre-mine.
Uh-huh.
There's no token sale.
Yeah.
The only tokens that will exist are people that cryptographically, provably earned them, effectively doing a version of mining.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whether it was with their capital or their compute or their code, you know, it's sort of like they're miners in the system. And so, you know, the same goes for, there's no Morpheus treasury.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's sort of one of the brilliant things that the paper authors proposed. Some Anons put out the paper September 2nd last year.
Okay.
Calling themselves Morpheus, Trinity, and Neo. And I noticed later, September 2nd is Keanu Reeves' birthday.
No way.
Yeah, and I was like, hey, I wonder how long they held that.
There's a bomb on the bus. A different movie.
Different movie. Right, but you know, it's like, I wonder how long they held the paper before they published it so they could get that Easter egg in there. It's like, hopefully not too long. But, you know, one of the cool concepts was, you may have seen a lot of people have contributed staked ETH to the Morpheus contract. It's been like $400 million in staked ETH has gone into the Morpheus contract in 30 days.
Yeah.
And there's no press. There's no company. There's nobody doing any marketing. It's been entirely word of mouth through the community. But what's happening? That staked ETH sits in the contract. You can withdraw it whenever you want. After 7 days, you want to pull back your principal. The only thing it's contributing is the yield.
Okay.
So if you know, like Lido has daily rebasing rewards.
Oh,
it's like every day a little bit of yield is generated, and that's going into the protocol and liquidity. Yeah. So there's no treasury. That money isn't being sent to anybody.
Yeah.
All it's doing is buying tokens in the automated market maker, in the Uniswap pool.
Wow.
So it's just sitting there forever in the protocol and liquidity. And so it's just providing liquidity to other people in the community. But there's no guy with an account that has that money that's like sending it to his buddies. Like, there is no treasury. And so this is the kind of system I think we really need, is one where there are no intermediaries.
Okay.
And there are no custodians. There's no ICO. There's no team holding a bunch of funds. It all starts day one, fair launch for everybody.
Yeah, limited supply.
Yeah, 42 million.
42 million.
Will ever exist.
Yeah.
And there's a burning function.
Double,
so it'll be
21 million.
Yeah. I noticed that too.
Yeah.
Is, you know, and there's a burning function. So it'll be something less than 42 million, but it'll never be more than 42. That's the easy way of thinking about it. And it's a long-term project. They set the emissions curve at 16 years.
Wow.
It's going to be 5 years before the first half of the tokens are in existence. And then it's sort of brilliant what they did on the tail emissions. Is they take a portion of the burn tokens and make that the block reward for the next 16 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you'll never exceed the 42 million, and it's always declining because it's only a part of the burned. that ends up back as the Brock Award, but it goes for 256 years.
And so, I like, you know, 256.
Yeah.
Everything's computationally correct.
Base two. Good solid base two numbers. So I like the sort of long-term nature of the project.
Yeah.
Right. Somebody could discover Morpheus in a year or in 10 years or in 20 years and still fairly compute, still fairly compete for providing compute or capital or code or interfaces, just like the guy that was there on day one.
And they just have to go in and just register with their wallet, right? And just say, this is what I'm contributing.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
You know, it's got this concept of atomic governance where, you know, anybody can register and release an agent.
Okay.
But if you're contributing code to like the protocol itself, to the reference implementation, it has to be merged in.
Okay, I see.
And who makes that decision? Whoever's maintaining the GitHub.
Okay.
But anybody can be a GitHub maintainer. It just takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
And so there aren't as many volunteers.
Yeah.
You know, you might have a few dozen people acting as GitHub maintainers. But it's really interesting, the game theory, is they're only going to merge in a valuable contribution.
Okay.
Because imagine you came and said, hey, I wrote these three lines of code. I'd like 10% of the weights.
I'm entitled.
No thanks.
Yeah.
Because it's a free market. So you think about it, like every month, the people that show up with the best code at the best price get merged in by the GitHub repo, and it's a competition.
Okay, yeah.
Competition over committees.
Absolutely, which drives innovation. Because
which drives innovation,
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot of the aspects. Is there anything I missed on this?
No, you know, I think just sort of understanding where is it in the process, you know, capital and code are live today. There was a lot of talk about decentralizing the compute aspect.
Yeah.
That'll probably be June, July.
Okay.
Because you need the token, it goes live on May 8th.
Uh-huh.
Right, we're sort of in this bootstrapping period right now.
Okay.
So as soon as that finishes, then you've got the tokens to do, you know, the proof of inference and you can use the compute aspects. And then the goal is to see it fully decentralized before July.
Amazing. So where can people find out more about the project and find out more about you?
One of the great websites put up by Eric Voorhees, who's one of the community members, is mor.org or more.org. It's got the GitHub, it's got the Discord, it's got all the links and everything on there. So it's a great place to see. You can just follow me on X.
Okay.
You know, DJohnstonEC.
Okay.
I'm pretty easy to find. So, yeah.
Right on. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely, John.
All right.